Hey everyone, welcome to season 4 of Outlander. This is Matt Roberts, executive producer, here with
Tony Graffia, also executive producer, and it's our first podcast of the new season.
It is, and this is episode, coincidentally, episode 1.
401.
Well, 401, but episode 1 of the new season. What did we call this one? I can't remember.
It's called America the Beautiful, which we'll see in a moment. But right now, we've got a cold open.
Yeah, the cold open was an idea that Tony and I co-wrote this script. It was cold open. We had an idea for starting years and years in the past.
Yeah.
And show kind of what a monolith might look, the circle of stones monolith might look like back then.
Yeah. I think what's interesting when we write together, I don't know if you've noticed this, but we always have an idea way, way in advance. That's something that when we know we're going to be writing an episode, we come up with an image or an idea is instantly in our heads of, oh, we got to show this somewhere. And this one was very kind of almost random because it didn't have specifically to do with the episode. But we knew we wanted to show, like, hey, what were the first stone circles? Like, when we saw Cragna Dune, where did those come from? And, you know, like Stonehenge, where did they originate? And we thought maybe we could show that. And it seemed kind of far-fetched, but
It it also will pay off down the road, yeah, if you're paying attention. And then
we segued from the circle of the stones into the circle of the noose, which, as everyone knows, is the one of the opening images of the book of Drums of Autumn.
As you can tell, we're already working on season five.
What was that book again?
Tony's already been drinking our bourbon. We decided on bourbon this season. Or things that are truly of the North American continent, so to speak. What are we drinking today?
We are drinking Eagle Rare, and you'll see why in a moment.
You'll see why in a moment. Obviously, this is we dove into the source material heavily in book 4. We had to shoot this a couple times, this scene. James has a very thick accent. And
James the actor.
James the actor who plays Hayes. He's really great. Love him. And I just remember my mother's voice ringing in my ear when we were shooting this. I love the scenes, but what I can't always understand what they say.
Yeah, we love this character. We really enjoyed him in the previous seasons, and but rather than hang someone that we hadn't gotten to know or care about, we decided, you know, it should be Hayes, and we're sad to see him go.
We're kind of assuming you've already seen the episode 4 or 5 times, and you're just following along on your 6th or 7th viewing, listening to this podcast. So
yeah, we don't want to have any spoilers for you, but if you are familiar with the story, you might have recognized the guy in the corner.
If you aren't, and you are watching for the first time, Tony apologizes for just spoiling the first scene for you.
I didn't say who it was. I just said notice the man in the corner there.
One of the big challenges for this season was because we stayed in, our studio and our base is in Scotland, and we filmed there for 4 years, and we have a great crew and a family unit, basically, in Scotland. We decided to stay in Scotland and film the North America, the colonies there. And so the challenge was for our art department Gary Steele and his entire team to recreate the colonies in Scotland. And he built, we found a piece of land, and he built the town of Wilmington, two or three streets for us there, and brought in our own mud, which Gary loves to do. So this was a complete build from scratch, and he did a ton of research, what it would look like and what it would feel like, basically. And I love the paint schemes, and because it was a new town, it wasn't old. It wasn't like Scotland where everything is 400, 500, 600 years old. This was the colonies, fresh and new, so everything was kind of bright and shiny.
Yeah, this is hard to watch because we do love this character. And, you know, we had a lot of discussions about would Jamie try to save his friend, because it seemed like, you know, Jamie wouldn't just let this happen. But we realized, you know, look, they're in the new world. Jamie doesn't know the land, the people, the magistrates. He doesn't have connections. And if he were to make some big heroic thing, you know, he would probably be arrested and killed along with his family. So he does the one thing Hayes asks him, which is to please look at me and smile so I can, it'll be the last thing I see. And we thought that was actually more heartbreaking for Jamie, who's usually heroic, to have to stand down and let this happen, but give his friend, still give him his friend some peace upon his death. Ugh, I can't, you know.
It's hard. I know.
I know this. It's all fake, but it still freaks me out. Ugh. So, yeah.
You know, and I think Sam did a fantastic job in showing that turn from, you know, giving Hayes that smile, and then to doing the quick turn.
Yeah.
As soon as the rope tightens, and it's a tough thing to do, and he does it so smoothly and eloquently.
Yeah.
We had over I think it was 150 extras this day to fill the streets. As always, a challenge.
Yeah. And still redcoats. Because, you know, they're in America. It's different, obviously, than Scotland. But the Redcoats were such a threat in Scotland, and we had so many crises with them in previous season. But they're in a new world in America. But
it's still, you know, it's still Britain.
Great Britain.
Everybody here is British, and we talk about that all the time. Is we don't want to jump the gun and get way ahead of ourselves historically. Because there's a lot of talk about that in the writer's room and with the executives and everything. Hold on. It's still, everybody's still British. We haven't fought a war over that yet.
Yeah. But something that is new here are the new main titles, which I hope you enjoy. I think most of the fans will probably be trying to guess as they watch these new titles. Ooh, what's that? I mean, I hope they are. What's that? You know.
Look, our fans don't guess. They don't speculate. They do nothing of the sort. They just really let the story unfold.
I think they like to guess, but a lot of times they guess wrong, and I love when we fool them, because then it gives them a little surprise.
Well, that's the key, is trying to fool the fans.
Okay, here's one of my favorite opening titles ever, is The Eagle, which we knew from the beginning as well that we wanted to do to open it with America. And Matt came up with the title, America the Beautiful.
It wasn't difficult. I didn't have to rack my brain.
No, but I love it because I think that's what this season is all about. And I like to say it's America the Beautiful and not so beautiful, because we'll be dealing with a lot of the great stuff. Some of the terrible stuff that was in the colonial times.
Well, that's kind of what we get paid for, is to find the subtext in things. And I think the subtext of America Beautiful is that it is when you're trying to create a beautiful home for yourself, there's a lot of things that are sometimes ugly, and the things you have to do and the things people do to you.
And it starts out, you know, started out with something pretty ugly with the hanging, but you know, that's the beauty of Jamie and Claire, is they always have adversity and things to overcome.
I think everybody will see also some of their favorite characters here. You know, we have the whole group around the table, the Marcelly and Fergus and now, I want to go on record and say Keith, who plays Leslie, has a lovely voice. After he sang this, I went up to him and said, why didn't you tell me you could sing? I would have had you sing all throughout last season. And he didn't want to push for a solo.
This is a really lovely...
Also, there are probably some fans that will say, hey, wait a minute. Isn't Jamie tone deaf? And he actually is tone deaf. He's not. He's just kind of chanting along, I think. You know, he's mimicking what people are doing. So he's not writing. He's not singing a solo here.
No.
One of the big things about this scene is. And it was, you know, in editing, there was things adjusted. There were actually redcoats that walked through earlier, but that scene was actually cut for time. And the feeling of this was supposed to drive the redcoats kind of out of the room, because these are all Scots mourning someone.
Right.
And it felt like, you know, they were doing that Casablanca thing where it's like, get out of here. This is our time.
Yes.
But that's always the difference between television and books, is we have time constraints and we know that books do not. So I wish we had all the time in the world, but we don't.
Yeah, it was very hard to edit this episode and decide what stays and what goes, because we had a lot of good material. But coming up is one of my favorite scenes.
You say that all the time. Every time you talk about a scene, you say one of my favorite scenes. You're gonna have to control yourself.
I know.
It's a long season, Tony.
It is a long season.
One, and you're gonna have favorite scenes throughout. So
I have favorite scenes in every episode, and I'm sure I'll be here to tell you about them.
We had so many favorite scenes in the first episode that Tony and I actually wrote a two-parter.
Yes, this
and
episode actually started as a two-parter.
I think it was 100-something pages.
Yes.
And this is just how we work. And then everybody...
He's not kidding.
No, I'm not kidding at all. And everybody said, wait a minute, hold on, you can't have a two-parter.
Well, like this scene. Okay, this scene, because it's not, you know, integral plot-wise to the story, but it's very important character-wise, because we all saw what young Ian went through last season with Galus, and just as we, you know, had to honor and do justice to Jamie's sexual assault storyline in, you know, the first and second seasons, we wanted to show that Ian here has not, you know, completely recovered from what happened to him last season, and it was, I just love that. I think it shows the bond and closeness between, you know, uncle and nephew, that he can confide in Jamie what happened to him, and Jamie, being a survivor of this type of thing himself, is able to give him some advice, which I find a really beautiful character moment between these really two great actors who did a great job on this scene.
I love Jamie and young Ian together. Any scene with those two together, I just want to watch both what Sam and and John bring to the characters as well. But it just the dynamic between the characters, because Jamie's, you know, this is the closest thing to a blood son that he has. I know that Fergus, he has raised Fergus, and he kind of vowed to protect him. But I think Jamie feels like Ian is the son he really never had in the sense of a blood son, and there's such a kinship that they have. But also what young Ian's gone through in his life, and I think that Jamie feels for that too, you know, that
yeah, you know, he sees himself in young Ian who really craves adventure and is fearless and, you know, really wants to get out and see the world. He's the one son of Jenny and Ian that didn't want to stay at Lollybrock and be a farmer. He wanted to get out there in the world like Jamie did. So,
but also, but because of that adventurous spirit, he was a, you know, he also was abducted and he was kidnapped and he was held, you know, as a prisoner, just like Jamie is, you know, over the course of his life has. But I, this tender moment that, you know, showing that contrast between Jamie's tender side and
his warrior side,
you know, like he says, you know, he's a violent man. You know, it says it, you know, multiple times that's what we love about Jamie, is that he can be, when it means something to him, a violent man. But he can also be a super tender guy that reads people's feelings and he can disarm people with his sense of humor and make them feel better mm-hmm. about a situation, which he's about to do here. And this is one of the lines that we both wrote, but you know, we took from the source material, of course, but you know, we wanted to, there's certain lines that are really important. And I think we fought for this.
We did.
Because you know, there's an editing process and there's people that weigh in. There's a lot of people that weigh into things. And to me, this is one of the most important lines in this scene. And that was the line. And see, that he makes him feel better. And then
it's very important that Jamie tells him it's not your fault. And you did what you needed to survive, which is what
thing.
Jamie
yep.
did. And I think a lot of, you know, people have gone through these situations will relate to this. And it's really important.
It is. I mean, that's you know, we don't ever try to tell the story of the day. It's the Outlander is Outlander, and that's what it is. And if somebody can take, you know, one of these stories and say, you know, that relates to my life, then so be it. But we don't set out and go, hey, let's tell this story because this is what's in the zeitgeist right now.
Yeah, it's just that those kind of things are timeless and they've happened all through the ages.
That's
and
what it
so
is.
It's important to portray that.
Okay.
Here we go.
What's this guy's name again? Bonet?
Bonet?
Bonnet, something like that.
Little Stevie Bonnet.
Little Stevie Bonnet. Ed Spaliers is. Oh, there he is, Stephen Bonnet.
Stole him from Downton Abbey.
We did. We stole him. We said, "Hey, we're gonna borrow him. We'll give him." No, we're not gonna give him.
I don't
back.
Think they need him back.
They don't need him back.
It's over. But we enjoyed him there, and he played quite a different character.
That's
really
what's so great
nice
about
guy,
Ed is Ed really kind of, and what we were looking for in the Stephen Bonnet character, and Ed, what Ed brings so nicely to the character is that he is charming.
Yeah.
As soon as you know, Ed walked in to my office in Scotland, and he was charming from the first second I met him. We had already, you know, seen much, you know, tape, and we knew his work on other shows and movies, but just he's a charming guy.
Yeah,
actually just really like him right off the bat.
Yeah,
and that's what we wanted about Bonnet, because that's what makes him so different than Blackjack.
Oh, totally. Yeah,
Blackjack you don't like, even though Tobias is a very lovely human being. Is the character of Blackjack, you don't like him, you don't want to sit down and have a long you don't want to have a drink with them or have a meal with them.
No, I would say Blackjack wears his darkness on his sleeve. And you instantly know when you look at his face that he's just got a lot of demons and a lot of baggage, and you don't trust him. Whereas this guy, I think he's got this quirky little smile, and you want to like him and trust him. We had a lot of discussions in the writer's room about sociopath versus a psychopath and what's the difference and is it, which one is this guy? And he just doesn't. He doesn't have a conscience.
Yeah, when we were talking to Ed, because we talked to, when the actors join the show, the EPs will collectively get on either in person or on the phone, and we talk to the actors when they come in, and we tell them, hey, this is what Outlander is. This is what, you know, the character. This is where we see the character, and we have a conversation about it. And we were talking to Ed about this, and what we said is, Bona is charming, but what he can do is he can mimic a situation where he can mimic emotions. He knows that he has to charm people. He knows that when people are sad, he has to pretend to be sad. When they're happy, he has to pretend to be happy, because he doesn't have those kinds of emotions to do the things that, well, let's just say he might do in the future. And that's kind of, you know, and we're very collaborative. You know, we talk to the actors about, you know, because they'll have ideas, and some of them are great. You know, we're like, that's a fresh take on the character.
Mm-hmm. Well, it was important for Jamie and Claire to believe that he was a nice guy. Otherwise, they would look, you know, if they had any suspicions about him or like something didn't feel right in their gut, they would look not so smart to have taken this guy on. So he had to be extra charming. And plus, they've just lost their friend, and he claims to be a friend of Hayes, and they're really doing this good deed to sort of, for Hayes'
sake.
Sorry,
that was me. I did that. I bumped into my mic.
That's all right. He's just pouring a little bit more Eagle Rare there. I noticed you poured me a little more.
I was pouring Tony more alcohol is what I was doing.
Did you think I needed to drink more?
I always think that. I think we go through when we you know, you write a scene in the script, and then it goes out to people and they read it and people weigh in on it. And the questioning of, because in the book, it's they stab him and he doesn't flinch, and people are like, well, how could that happen? People would flinch, you know. So there's always discussions of there's a difference of reading something and then showing something, and
yeah.
we kind of get into that. In this situation, it was, oh yeah, how would that play? You know, do we show it going in? Do we?
Right.
But it's always nice when you have a piece of venison next to you.
Yeah, that was an easy fix.
Yeah.
Now, I think we talked a lot about this scene and what we liked, what we wanted to do that was a little different here is have Bonnet be fascinated with Claire. As we imagined he might be. He's, you know, she's an...
Well, who isn't?
Yeah.
I mean, that's kind of the thing about the characters, is there's everybody's fascinated with Jamie, because, you know, he's Jamie. And,
yeah.
You know, there are a lot of men throughout the stories. You know, Dougal was very fascinated.
Oh, absolutely.
With Claire. And I think Colm as well.
Yeah.
Colm was so he was really fascinated. The King of France was fascinated.
Yeah, I think the smarter guys, they sense something different about her. They see that she's special and unusual, and they're really drawn to it. And I loved, in the writing of this scene, we loved connecting, you know, the finale of last year, which Matt and I also wrote, showed Claire almost drowning in the sea. And we wanted here to connect, Bonnet's a backstory of Bonnet's, and that he has these dreams of drowning, and sort of he studies people and he finds a way to relate to them. And I think he's studying Claire here, and he's opening himself up a little and making himself vulnerable, but of course it's a manipulation.
Well, that's what I think you're right. I think he sees, he tries to find the crack.
Yeah.
And then he weasels his way into that crack.
Yeah, and he
sees she's a healer, but he also sees she wears two rings. He also, you know, he senses that she has compassion and she cares. So he opens himself up to bring her closer.
Yeah, and she's a little drawn. She's a little drawn to him, and like he's an unusual guy, and this is something that will continue to play through the seasons. Yeah, he's got some maniacal intuition that allows him to sort of penetrate into someone's psyche and connect with them and tap into something. And I like that he's reading her a little there.
Yeah.
And he just, you know, because we always show our characters as pretty much all powerful, whether Claire or the healer. But here I think she's getting played a little, and he's...
Well, that's what he said. He just says, you know, then you know what I speak of. Then you and I are alike.
Yeah.
You get it. We're the same.
And it's good, because if our characters were always more powerful and smarter and stronger than everyone they run across, it'd be pretty boring. So I get excited when, you know, we get a character that they've kind of met their match and they can't figure out, or they don't see danger coming, or, you know, it makes it more interesting.
I don't think it speaks to anybody's, you know, intelligence. I think that that this man sees that these are compassionate, generous people, and that's what he taps into. And the fact that Jamie and Claire are generous and compassionate doesn't make them, in my book, it's not a weakness, you know.
No.
But it is true, and I tell this story. Tony and I and some of the writers were at a panel one time, and someone asked me who was the hardest character to write, and I said it was Jamie, because, you know, Jamie's a Superman, you know, he has very, very few faults, you know, and I said that's what, you know, is so difficult about it, is he's perfect. And someone in the back of the audience yelled, and that's the way we like it. And then we started laughing, and it's true. I mean, Jamie Frazier is a really solid guy. But we have to create conflict somewhere, you know, even on the television show, you have to create conflict. So,
yeah.
Maybe you want to talk about this scene.
Maybe I just want to watch it.
Oh.
Hmm. It's a little sexy. Well,
we know. Let's talk about the elephant in the room. The elephant in the room is a big rock next to a river. And
they are sitting on a big rock.
They are sitting on a tarp.
Oh, it looks like a rock.
It was supposed to look like a rock.
It's a metaphorical rock.
It's a metaphorical slippery rock.
Yeah, it's true. We really wanted to portray this a little closer to what's in the book there, which was the famous slippery rock,
right?
Sex. The problem is.
Well, I mean, we have a lot of issues, and of course, there's we're not in North Carolina in the middle of summer, where it's 100 degrees and with 80% humidity. This was filmed in the middle of winter.
And he just couldn't get him, you know, undressed in the water. Just doesn't happen. I learned that in my very first script that I wrote, Rent. I wanted Claire to be skinny dipping and have the Highlanders cannonball off the cliffs and destroy her solitude. And the first thing that happened was they said, no way anybody's going swimming in Scotland in the winter. They're just not getting in the water. And so we were a little bummed that we didn't get to portray it. But we, you know, we did. We felt the important thing about this scene is they haven't been alone together for a very long time. They've been traveling with this group of people. They're in this new country, and they finally get some alone time, and we did.
And this is the other thing is, like, you know, we do this quite a bit, is that, as we all know, the books are very dense. They're long, and the television show is much shorter. So we have to borrow from sections. And
well, we borrowed something in this section.
In this section, exactly. The law of thermodynamics is just, we love that. So it was, hey, where can we use that? We don't want to lose it, so where can we use it? And hey, that rhymes. You know what? Maybe I should just quit my day job and be a poet.
You should take up writing, I think.
Traveling poet.
You could get paid for that.
Yeah.
Yeah, we did pull in the law of thermodynamics. This is why you can't have too much whiskey. And we love that that speech, and we thought it played here. It was appropriate, and perhaps we'll see some slippery rock down the road somewhere. But for now, the important thing was their connection.
Way down the road.
Way down the road. Not promising anything.
Yeah, don't promise something that won't be delivered.
No.
Kat and Sam were great in this scene. They absolutely just, gave themselves to the scene, and that's what I love so much when they do. It's just,
well, it's early.
Their chemistry is so amazing on camera.
It's about emotional connection, and that happens a lot around death when someone you love dies and you've been through, you know, essentially a funeral together. People want to feel alive and connect, and that's what these two needed to do in this scene. So,
and I think what the other really important thing here, and if Meryl was here, she would say, is that this is the most important part of the scene to me, is this part. This is the connection. Is that, you know, it's that the finale is that we're here, we're together, and this is America the Beautiful, and it's that connection after the act.
Yeah.
Oh, it's a new day.
Yeah, I like this. It's kind of the beginning spark of when they think about possibly staying.
Yeah.
Another spoiler alert. I hope you have watched the episode. I'm assuming
you have.
Yeah, Tony,
ruining it for everybody.
When I do these with Meryl, she always tells me that I'm allowed to say what happens because she's sure that everyone watching has already seen the episode.
I'm constantly going,
I can't say that, I can't say that.
I think that's true.
They've all seen it.
I think that's true. I think that most of the fans that are listening to the podcast of your sultry voice.
If not, pause now and go back and watch it. Or this all going to be ruined for you?
Well, it would have been ruined in the first scene.
Well, true.
When Claire said, not Claire, geez, what am I talking about? When you said that Hayes was hanged.
Yeah.
You know what's nice about Outlander, and we write it this way in the scripts, is that, and Kat and Sam... Katrina and Sam play it this way, is those little moments where they connect.
Yeah.
And that's important, you know, as we, mm-hmm. as we go forward in our past and we go forward, is those little connections, those little moments where they look at each other, or they have a little kiss, or they have a little touch. And it's like, this is our couple. This is our story.
Yeah. Well, I like that they're having a nice moment, but also that, and I believe you added this part, which I really like, because they were having this sort of beautiful moment, but then there comes a little foreshadowing about what's going to happen, you know, to the Native Americans that are there. You know, that was a dream for some and a nightmare for others. I like that sentiment, and I think you'll see some of that.
Isn't it always true? I mean, somebody gets something, and a lot of times in this world, somebody goes without, or somebody has to move aside, or somebody is moved aside. And I think that's what's tough about telling a story about the beginnings of the United States.
Yeah.
He's so thoughtful. Isn't Jamie Fraser thoughtful? Here's what Jamie Fraser does. He makes it hard on every man who watches this.
True.
With his spouse or girlfriend or significant other. He makes it hard.
Well, he's not. This isn't a gift, remember. He's giving it to her to sell.
It's kind of a gift.
To sell.
It's a Jamie gift, though.
Wear this so it'll look good on you, and we can sell it and get some money.
Look, I'll go on record. Jamie Fraser.
Nah, look at him.
We have a little saying is, "What would Jamie Fraser do?"
Yeah, and, I love this shot in the mirror of the two of them. They just look beautiful there. That's a great shot. I actually wanted to end the scene on that mirror shot, but Meryl really loved the bow and the kissing of the hand, so we kept this little part.
Yeah.
And it's cute. It's nice. Now, where's that house? Is that?
That's made up.
Yeah, I mean, where did we film?
We made it.
Oh, we made it up. Out of thin air.
I love this scene in the sense that, you know, when we put Jamie and Claire in these situations, they fit in perfectly, but they don't fit in.
Yeah.
You know, they're the ones that they can seamlessly dine with the King of France or with the governor, but they're so out of place in the sense of they're internally they're out of place.
Yeah. I love the character actors too around the table. It's always so fun to cast them, and usually there's so many good ones that we're hard pressed to pick, you know, only three or four that we need for the scene because they're all great. I mean, the German guy is great, and I love this guy, and
I love how Katrina played that. She was 100%. She was totally insulted there, and she wanted to say something back, and she had to kind of
rein herself in. Yeah.
Yep. And this is the brilliance of Gary Steele is we found a place in Edinburgh, this room. And he takes it and totally recreates a colonial period parlor or a dining room.
Now that's Mr. Lillington, whose house it is, but we're meeting and Governor Tryon.
Tryon, who he gives over the head of the table to, which is
his guest, who's the governor. I love this actor and Tim Downey.
He's absolutely one of these guys where you go, you see him, he embodies the character.
Mm-hmm.
He and Tim and Sam got along great. Their chemistry was great. And you also go, okay, how do we put him in more scenes?
Right.
As you know, we don't have a ton of room to just add scenes.
No.
Well, that can't be good.
Yeah, we did a lot of research, and it was very interesting because not a lot of us in the writer's room knew, you know, we know the bigger story of the American Revolution, but, you know, this is North Carolina pre-revolution. It, what, how many, several years before, 7 or 8 years
before. Five. Oh, no, six. This is 60,
it's
69, right?
60, oh, 68, I believe. Oh, yeah, you're right. Longer, yeah, it's a little bit, but.
Look, we don't even know now. That's how confused we are.
It's a lot to keep track of, but we did learn a lot about the regulators and North Carolina and what was going on in the colonial days before the revolution and what were the initial little baby stirrings of trouble to come. Because at the moment, you know, everything is Britain, like you said earlier, and everything's under the crown. It's all the king's land. But already people are in America are starting to say, hey, you know, we don't like the way this is being run. And this is our country now. We're in a new place. It's a new rules, you know, new situation. And they're kind of upstarts. And so it's very, very interesting. And all this stuff that happens is sometimes, you know, considered the start of the revolution.
I think you're getting ahead of yourself here, Tony.
I'm getting a little ahead of myself, so I'm not going to mention the things that
I think she's absolutely.
We were talking about that today.
Yeah.
As
some of you might know,
beginning.
We are right now in the process of breaking season five as season four airs. We are
right.
We're in the process of writing the scripts for season five. So please forgive my colleague over here for divulging too much.
I think it's still pretty well cloaked, but it's the very, very beginnings that I think what's exciting is that Jamie and Claire are there at the very, very start. I think that's something that excites Jamie.
I think there was a line here in one of the scripts, I think it might have been this one, where Claire was talking about being at the beginning of America.
Right, right.
You know, she was a citizen of America before America was America.
Yeah.
And I don't remember the exact line.
I think the line you're thinking of might have been that exact line was cut maybe, but we have several instances where she says similar things and
all
kind of marvels at the fact.
I think they're all cut too.
Well, they might be, but stop writing so long, so many words.
There are a lot of words.
But I think what appeals to Jamie is that as much as he loved Scotland, his homeland, everything there was, you know, had been there for centuries and centuries. It was an old land, old customs, old ways, and he has always been a little bit of a man out of time himself, even though Claire's a woman out of time. He's more progressive for his time. And so I think it really intrigues him to be part of a new country and a new movement, and it's almost like waving a red flag in front of a bull when Claire's talking about the land that America will become. He's drawn to that and mulling over what it would be like to be part of that. And
I think also he's thinking about his daughter and Brianna, mm-hmm. and if he stays here and helps forge this new land and this new world and this new country, that he can make it a better place for his daughter, who he knows grows up in this land.
That's right.
And I think that's important to him in some way, that if he goes back to Scotland, that he's somehow disconnected from Brianna.
Yeah.
And
that's exactly right.
I think that's, you know, how that's what clicks for him in this scene is that he says, mm-hmm. wait a minute, hold on a second. It's about Brianna.
Yeah.
I like how casually is there. Yeah, five more.
Yeah.
I can do it again.
But I love when she's like, we'll be on the wrong side of history again, because they'll be fighting for the crown, and the crown is ultimately going to lose. So it's a great dilemma, and it's the complete opposite of what happened in Scotland with Culloden, is that they're on the winning side, ironically, but it's not the side that they would choose to be on.
Right.
But it's very tempting because Jamie has had this offer from the governor, but he knows the price that comes with that. And
that's the line.
Yeah. It's the only way, really, that he can be close to Brianna. And I think that's really poignant.
Oh, some of you may recognize this beast as Rollo. David Brown, who is our UK producer, and I were in South Africa, and we flew back to Scotland, and we picked out a couple puppies.
Yeah.
Very early on.
They're so cute.
Because we...
Little tiny things, yeah.
Yeah, because I remember the conversation. I said to David, hey, we have to get a dog. And he goes, why? And I go, it's very important. Season four. And so we got on a flight. We find these two. We have two dogs. One actually ends up playing Rollo more than the other. And but we got them as, you know, eight week old puppies, and raised them up, and that's the beast you see before ye.
Yep. And John Bell hung out a lot with the dog as the dog was growing up, so that he could form a bond with it and they would be close and be able on screen to look like, you know, it was really his dog, and the dog loves him too.
We did, and also the dog, you know, interacted with the crew, and it looks a lot, you know, Dewey is the dog's name. Who plays Rollo, is very friendly, just a sweet dog, and doesn't quite play as aggressive as the dog in the books. So we had to make some minor adjustments.
Change his character just a little bit.
Yeah, it makes minor adjustments.
He's not quite as ferocious. And here's where Jamie and Claire let everybody know that they're staying. But telling Ian that he's still going back, which is...
And this is what I love about John Bell, who plays Ian, is he just embodies Ian. I think. You know, he's that troublemaker with a heart of gold, you know. He's just such a lovely guy. Uh-oh. I don't think they're going anywhere.
Oh, they have some news.
I think a lot of people will notice that both Marcelly and Fergus are in this tavern, in the New World, because as the source material goes, they're not.
No, she stays back in Jamaica.
She stays back in Jamaica.
Because
why? Because you're about to find out.
See, I'm not going to spoil it. I'm going to wait till she says it.
Wait for it, Tony. Wait for it. There you go.
She's having a baby.
She's having a baby.
I love Jamie's reaction there. Sam did the cutest reaction. What? And Claire is particularly surprised since Marcelly asked her for advice last season about how not to get a bairn.
And I think this is one of
apparently,
the key.
She didn't take that advice.
No, not at all.
So Claire's like, hello.
I think one of the key differences between, say, you know, a book and us, the television show, is that we have actors that have commitments, and if you want to keep them, you have
right.
to you have to write them into the show. So this was kind of a no-brainer anyway of keeping Marcelli and Fergus on screen. So
and
that's
we
what we
Marcelli.
Did. We had to write
she,
them. We had to adjust the story to keep them around.
Yeah. I'll let you talk about how you filmed this. It was quite a feat.
In a different way. We did a lot of filming in Eastern Europe to do the rivers. And then what we do is we film the riverboat separately and kind of superimpose would be the easiest way of saying it. We use visual effects. So I kind of love the way Jamie kind of parses out this information. He knows it all. He could cut to the chase, but he doesn't. He kind of lets it out slowly about Jocasta.
Gary Steele also had to build a riverboat from scratch.
Gary did build a riverboat from scratch. Actually, Gary built nothing. Danny, our construction supervisor, built it. But Gary designed it, so that was what was nice about it. Gary comes in with designs, and he shows them to us, and he gets excited about them. And I think that because Outlander from... You know, imagine what Gary, you know, I mean, you guys have seen it, what he gets to build every year. It's one year, it's a great hall, and next year it's Versailles, and, you know, it goes to Rose Hall in the Caribbean. You know, he gets to do all these things, and this year it's a riverboat and Lillington's, and there's more to come. But I'm not going to spoil it like Tony Graffia does.
Now, this is the first time in the New World that we've seen...
we've seen slaves last season.
Yeah, we saw slaves
quite a bit.
In Jamaica last
season. Yeah, quite a bit.
But in the New World...
Well, that
is
the New
World.
This
is the first one... Oh, Jamaica?
Yeah.
It counts as part of the New World?
Yeah. What do you think, is the Old World?
well, it's a bit of Old World because, yeah, they did have slavery there and slave markets. It was very, very common. They even... had slaves back in Europe and even in Scotland. But here, this is the first one we've seen in the New World. And what's interesting about him is that he's actually not a slave. He's been freed because when we researched and there was like a statute that if a slave did something exceptional, which is ridiculous that they had to prove themselves, but if they did do something such as save their master's life, then they could be set free. And that's what the case is here, because the riverboat captain was saved by Eutrochlus, and he now he works for him. He's not a slave.
Look at Rolo trying to get some screen time. Once again, thoughtful Jamie Fraser giving another present.
That's a little gift for her.
I know.
Is it their anniversary? I can't remember. Oh, I think it's near their anniversary, or he says something like...
I'm sure he does. Jamie.
Know, 20 years ago we were married or something.
He does.
24 years ago, I can't remember. Although they haven't been together.
Yeah, you know who remembers? Jamie Fraser remembers.
That is a really cool looking
It really is. I think... Mm-hmm. I think once again, kudos to the art department. They build these, the props department builds
so
these
authentic.
Things that
and so detailed.
I know, it's crazy. Every guy who got their wife a vacuum for their anniversary is just like going, ah. Oh. I like this moment. This is what I think makes Outlander special. It's these, we take the time to do these little moments that other shows would just let go, and they would say that they don't do anything. But for us, that's what the show is about, is these moments.
Oh, there you go. 24 years ago.
You were close.
I think it's roughly their anniversary, if not the actual day. He's just, you know, honoring the day that they did marry. They seem like a couple that's been together 24 years, even though actually in actual years, they probably only been
actually,
together
it's probably
four
their
years.
Fourth anniversary, yeah.
Fourth or fifth anniversary, at the most, because they were apart for 20 years.
Yeah, it's the fourth anniversary.
Yeah.
Now, some of you might notice, this was something that Tony and I put into the script, and controversial is the word I would use.
We really wanted to do this. We thought it'd be awesome, and I think it is.
I do too. I think it's something different. I think it's we've seen things like this before.
We always envisioned the last scene playing with America the Beautiful playing over it.
Because of how traumatic this is, and you know, once again, when you step out, you have to do something. You have to create a visual package of everything.
And juxtapose America the Beautiful with the not so beautiful, which is what happens here.
And also the kindness and the goodness that they gave to Bonnet. And how that was repaid. We talked a lot about you know, the characters we love. It's always tough when you start to love characters, but there's a harshness of the times and the harshness of the story that you have to go, it's time.
And here's a little surprise coming up.
Are you going to ruin it?
I'm not. I just got excited.
Just by the way, when you tell someone there's a surprise party in the...
Yeah, don't tell me.
That's a rude...
Do not tell me anything.
What's so great is when we watch this the first time, you look at the actors and you look at what's playing on their faces, and you don't... their talent.
Yeah.
They convey all the emotions.
You don't need dialogue.
You don't need the dialogue there, and I think we know exactly what Claire is feeling, and we know what Jamie's feeling, and we know how Bonnet. We can see his actions. And I think we flip-flopped something here, huh?
Yeah, I think we switcherooed. There she is.
Yep.
She's got a gold ring.
Gold ring.
I think we all know what that means. Enough said.
Yep. There it is, Ep 1. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much, guys.
I think Tony and I will maybe be back for Episode 2, but hopefully you enjoyed the start of Season 1. I mean, Season 4, the Episode 1, and we'll be back with you Episode 2 in a week.
We'll see you next week, and we're very excited about this season. I cannot wait for you to see the rest of the episodes. We'll be here.
Good morning and good night to everybody. I don't know where you are in the world, but have a good day.
Bye.